So I think it's important to look at what the service provider is offering and be truthful to yourself if it's going to fit you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's valuable. Because, yeah, if it doesn't fit, it's like,
yeah,
not a good fit. Captain Obvious. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Framework Podcast. I'm your host, Ana Trujillo-Limon, joined by my other host, Odero Aisweeney. Odero, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And we are so excited today to be here at the FPA conference with Kelly Fedusinko. And all right, I got it right. I did it. I'm always after people for not for calling me Anna, yeah. So now I have to get people's names right.
It's kind of still a new name to me because I got married 4 years ago.
So. Okay. So we're here at the FPA annual conference in Phoenix, and we're excited today to talk to Callie about marketing for advisors, some trends in AI. So Callie, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you both for having me. I'm excited.
Yes, us too. We're really excited. We always kick off with some fun questions to kind of break the ice. So tell us about what your first money memory was.
First money memory. Oh, my gosh. Okay. My first money memory would be I had lice.
Oh, this is already good.
We are getting authentic and vulnerable today. I love it.
I was in maybe second or third grade. And we were at Walgreens. And I don't know why this is the memory I have, but it was like a big deal. There was like this little horse and rider toy. Mm-hmm. And I was allowed to get it. And I was like, wow. You're going to let me get it. It's just because I have lice.
Well, that's traumatic, you know? Yeah. And then everybody, do you remember, like, I don't know, you're a millennial, so yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like back in the day when they used to check everybody at school.
Yes.
And it was like embarrassing. Like it was, you know, so I'm sorry you had to go through that trauma.
Thank you. But well, I'm glad you got it. Like all your fuzzy toys have to be like put in a bag or washed.
Aww,
so this one wasn't fuzzy.
Yeah. So you got to, yeah, that's smart. Yeah. Good on your, you know, whoever bought that for you. Thought
you.
Of ahead, you know? And so, did you ever like have a first job and then save up a bunch of money and buy something that really meant something to you?
Yeah. A car. Yeah. So first job would be my dad owned an exotic pet shop.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Great. I'm talking now, not in the beginning, but eventually he had sloths, marmosets. So we're talking very exotic.
Wow. Did you guys have like snakes in the house?
Yes.
Okay.
We did. Gosh, iguanas.
Oh, wow.
you're brave. Like,
I mean, I didn't have a choice. Tortoises in the backyard. Yeah. Wow. It was the whole thing. So that was my first job. And then from there, I also worked at like a summer camp because my mom was an elementary school teacher. Yeah. And Walgreens in the beauty department. Okay. My official title was beauty advisor.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
I won't
you
tell
were destined.
You. Yeah. I mean, I won't tell you how many very uncomfortable pickup lines I got from that.
I bet. Do you still like look at people and like I'm gonna advise them on what they need, what products they might need under your eyes, girl? You need like you can tell me that, right? I need some help.
No, I mean usually I think it of myself, but you know.
That's fair. Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Out of curiosity, could you tell us about your journey into marketing for financial advisors? How'd you get here?
Yeah. Okay. So I kind of touched on like it was a big deal that I was allowed to get this toy when I had lice. So my parents came from a background where they were missionaries before I was born. And then from there, they were an elementary school teacher and my dad opened the pet shop, right? Mm-hmm. So they were not taught a lot of wealth building techniques. Mm-hmm. And so we grew up, I grew up. And there was a lot of tension or, like, always feeling like it was a big deal to buy things. Like, there's not enough money. I always had, like, this fear that bills weren't going to be paid. Mm-hmm. Why I had that fear, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure I was picking up on something like kids do. Mm-hmm. So out of college, I thought I was going to be designing CD covers.
So you've always been creative.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you can see, you know, where the CD industry has gone.
Good thing That's fair. You didn't take that route.
Exactly. Good thing. And I ended up getting a job at a financial planning firm.
Wow.
As their marketing person. And then while I was there, I also was doing some client services for them. And that was like such a blessing because I wasn't taught a lot of those wealth building principles. So being in the industry, I just like soaked up whatever I could. And it made like a huge impact on my life and my family's life. So my mom, I shared principles with her. I introduced her to some advisors. And for the first time ever last year, she's like, I'm going to be able to retire.
Wow.
Like, she never thought she was going to be able to.
Congratulations.
She's like, I'm going to have to work till I die. So it's been like a big deal.
Oh, that's amazing. That's so good to stop me for a second. So Kelly, we used to email back and forth ever so often because back in the FPA days, you wrote columns for us and did all that great stuff because you were one of the coaches in the Coaches Corner.
Yeah.
So talk to us about, you know, this community. Here we are, how many, like 7 years later, we're still here coming to this conference. Talk to us about why you work with this community, why you keep coming back, what it means to you.
Yeah. So that impact that it had, I see the value of financial planning. But I also see the value for somebody who has the wealth or the income, but has the, almost like the same problem of not knowing the principles to save appropriately. Or maybe they really want to give back, but they just don't know how to do that in an efficient way. So I love that part of financial planning. And the FPA has just been so welcoming to me and, I mean, pretty much to anyone who's an advisor. And I love that and want to support that.
For sure.
So considering the fact that we're in a – our industry is skews a little, I don't want to say older, but maybe let's say more seasoned.
You're so diplomatic. I love it.
Try to be. There's a little bit more of seasoned individuals in our industry. So they're not – they didn't grow up or they're not used to technology or marketing. So who are some advisors or some planners out there that you've seen do a good job with their marketing and what is it that they're doing?
I've seen a few. They're active. They are willing to try new things. I think that's a big thing. Especially in the beginning, not as much after the pandemic, but before the pandemic, I would get a lot of pushback of, well, we've built our business this way. We have no reason to change it. I think the pandemic kind of like put us all in a pressure cooker where you had to change it. And there have been some that really embraced that. And I see them doing things on social media and starting podcasts, doing videos. And I think that can be very intimidating if you've never done anything before. But one step at a time. What did Chris Gardner say yesterday? How do you eat an elephant?
One bite at a time. That's really good. Are there any advisors or planners that you've worked with in particular that you think have done an extraordinary job of that?
Well, I mean, all of the advisors that I work with, obviously, because
I'm really good at what I do. I love it. I love the confidence.
This is edited really hard.
we can if you need us to.
I know you love all of them.
Yeah. I see. It's like you can't. It's like asking a parent which child is their favorite.
I can't say it publicly.
And mom, if you're listening, I know it's me, and I know you can't say it publicly.
Exactly. Well, actually, my family, my mom totally could. Everybody knows I'm the favorite. Yeah.
No, I'm lying to myself and to you guys. I know it's my brother. It's okay. It's okay.
Same. I get it.
I see. He's a good guy. I understand. So a lot of our coaching members at Carson, you know, have been asking questions about AI. And so, you know, as a writer and as a I've never worked on a marketing team until recently. I was moved over. So it's kind of a big learning curve for me. So just like playing with tools with the AI in the AI space and trying to figure out some stuff. A lot of people are in that same boat. A lot of advisors, a lot of marketers. So let's talk a little bit about AI use in marketing. What are your thoughts? What are your recommendations? What should people look out for?
My recommendations would be cautious. So I think it's important to try new things, but in a smart way. So my experience with AI at this point it's not at a place where it can create content for you. Definitely don't do that. I have a video with an example. I had had ChatGPT maybe edit out the name. I don't know if that's a good issue, but I had AI write a bio for me 3 different times. And it said I went to a different university with a different degree in each bio that it rewrote. And none of them were accurate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, some of the advisors that have been asking, like, I'm really concerned about like plagiarism. And like, since it pulls from those public sources, I think people who are trying to use it for that, you know, definitely run it through a plagiarism checker at the very least, so you can see where it's pulling stuff from and be able to protect yourself.
Yeah.
And you brought up in that blog, like, protect your reputation, right? You don't want to be known as the person who's out there stealing other people's content.
Right.
So, yeah, that's another
point. Fact check.
The quality control stuff. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, it almost, at this point, it's almost like you spend just as much time editing when it comes out with than you would to have written the thing by yourself. However, it is good at giving ideas. Like, I did use it for ideas, or I wrote my own bio with facts and then had it like rewrite it, or like, hey, rewrite this with this many words. Maybe I need 100 more words or something.
And another thing you mentioned was the paid versus the free, right? Like, like you said, if it's free, you're probably the product, right? So it's like, make sure like these are paid things that you're using, but using it for outlines and ideas and stuff, I think that's really valid at this point. What are your thoughts about AI,
Odara? Yeah, no, I think AI is really interesting.
In marketing.
I think it's really interesting, similar to most, I don't want to say fads, but a lot of things that we see, similar to like Bitcoin. You know, at a point, everyone thought that it was going to get rid of every single asset and every dollar in the world. But then there were other cynics who thought that it meant absolutely nothing, but it fell in the middle, you know?
Exactly.
It has a place, but it didn't replace everything. So I guess my question, I'm really curious of, what do you think the middle ground for AI will be? So like 10 years from now, like, what is the realistic version of what we'll be using?
I don't think I'm qualified enough to answer that.
Come on, you could just want
your opinion. It doesn't have to be a fact.
I definitely think AI is going to improve tremendously. I mean, even over the next year. I think it needs some sort of regulation, though. I think that's what's lacking right now. Some sort of oversight because of the plagiarism. And I mean, they have added already. They've added a part where you can say, where did this information come from? And that wasn't there, you know, just a few months ago. So I think that's, I think it's just going to continue to expand in that direction, which will be awesome and useful for everyone. I also, somebody told me yesterday that, so they did a session on ChatGPT yesterday. I didn't get to go because I was talking at the same time, but they were telling me that there is a position called like, prompt engineer, and they get paid like $300,000 just to come up with the prompts to ask ChatGPT. So it, like, there's a whole technique to the way you ask your questions.
That's their career change coming up.
Now, I don't know how long that'll last, especially as they're improving the software, but it's very important how you ask the questions.
Yeah, for sure. Well, one thing, you know, running your own marketing firm and everything, I'm curious about your, and I know this is kind, might come out a little biased, but what's the benefit of like having professional help when it comes to your marketing versus trying to go it alone? That question. And then how can they, you know, vet the marketing agencies they want to work with, and what questions should they ask?
Oh, that's loaded. Those are really good questions.
Thank you.
Okay, let's start with the first part of it again. Let me go in order.
Just what's the value of hiring a professional versus trying to go it alone?
Okay, heavy lifting. Time. I mean, everything comes down to, do you have the time or the money to spend on it? And I think advisors are small business owners. They have a lot, I don't know if I can curse, but they have a lot of shit going on.
Yeah, they have to take care of. I love it. It'll give me more freedom to be my authentic self.
So, yeah, they've got a lot of shit they have to handle. You've got people, staff that you have to manage, which, goodness, have you guys managed people? It's like a whole, it's a whole thing.
People are the worst. I know, I'm a person.
Exactly. So they have to manage people. They have their clients they have to make money for. And then there's bookkeeping. There's everything that goes with running a business. And marketing, something that is vital and needed, but it needs the attention and time put into it, invested, if you want to see things mm-hmm. pay off. So I think that's the benefit of hiring someone, is you don't have to do it alone.
Yeah.
And you don't have to go through the learning curve that the person you're paying has gone through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what would you say are some of the more evident benefits that advisors have expressed to you after using your services?
I mean, time, right? Yeah, they're always like, wow, you've taken so much off our plate. If they were doing marketing on their own before, sometimes they haven't done anything. Mm-hmm. And so usually they're just like, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even know all this was possible. And getting a lot of our clients hear from their clients. Mm-hmm. So they'll get calls or emails after we've sent out a newsletter or we've posted something online, and it will bring up that topic for a client. And mm-hmm. I think that's really important, because you're staying top of mind, and it's going to help increase referrals. Mm-hmm.
For sure.
And I think, right around 2008, around that time, mm-hmm. people talked about the blog era. Mm-hmm. I think now we're in the podcast
yes.
era.
Oh, yes.
What would you say is maybe the next trend?
Video.
Okay. Could you expound on that? Like, how so?
I mean, I think it's already starting, but video is definitely going to be the next big trend, I think. Especially as we all have smartphones. Yeah. You have access to do a lot of things yourself, which makes it just so much easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you're seeing, like, the video stuff. It gets the most engagement.
Yeah.
Like, when you're posting stuff on LinkedIn, it's mm-hmm. like you post a video. Like, we've been doing these lives, right, for another organization I'm part of. And they have gotten so much engagement. And it's not when they're live. It's when mm-hmm. it's after they're mm-hmm. live.
I also do a live stream, and it's the same thing.
I was going to ask you about that. Let's talk about that. Like, why did you decide to start doing that? Like, how has the engagement been for that? And what's... I ask like 5 million questions.
That's
so like, we'll stop there. Let's talk about that first, and then I'll ask the other one.
Why did I decide to start it? Someone on my team was like, "You should do a live stream."
Yes, because they are they're fun and like
they
they're
are.
Easy at the time, because it's like it just flows.
You know? Mm-hmm. Well, what happens with the live stream is you get a notification when someone goes live, mm-hmm. And so especially if you're interviewing someone else, like you're also going to be on their channel mm-hmm. and get people looking at their stuff and looking at you. So I think it's really beneficial. And just because it's live, you still have a recording after.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's where we see our most views with mm-hmm. the live stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I love about those is you could take the recording and chop it up into little shorts and like little quotes. And it's like, I'm a big believer in like, you need to be more efficient instead of like continuing to take the one piece of content and, you know, chop it up and use it over and over.
I will say with video, and maybe this will change in the future, it doesn't necessarily help with SEO. It does help if you have it on YouTube, because YouTube is such a big search engine.
Okay.
But you'll want to type out the transcript either on your website or in YouTube itself. That way, when people are searching, it's going to pull up those keywords.
Oh, wow. That's a really great tip.
What are some of the tools? Like, do you have a tool that you use to go live that also generates a transcript, or do you use a combination of them?
We use Restream when we go live, which is awesome. Like, it streams to all the different channels. We always have trouble with LinkedIn, because LinkedIn has like a 30-day logout period. So like, you can't create an event 30 days early or 31 days earlier.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Or you won't be able to stream to it.
Okay.
But Restream will do all the platforms at one time, and you can add in really professional looking watermarks or borders or backgrounds to really keep your brand consistent.
Yeah.
So what are some of the topics that you've seen, I don't want to just say drive engagement, but what have been some of the more pertinent topics that financial advisors have been asked to talk about recently?
That they've been asked to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. Not sure if I have an answer or not. So like, people I'm interviewing were talking specifically about marketing, but that wouldn't necessarily be something I would tell an advisor to focus on, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess a recent client has been talking a lot about executive benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's really kind of go back to your audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, who you're trying to serve, and what your specialty is.
Yeah. So, Kelly, you talk a lot about, and your process and involves a lot of analytics and then analyzing the analytics and then kind of being agile in that way with your clients. And I love that. But people who are kind of going it alone and they want to focus on analytics, what would you say is the best metrics to focus on when you're first starting out?
Such a great question. Because in my session yesterday, somebody was like, this is a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. They're like, how am I going to do this? So what I say is, who's your audience? And what's your win? Mm-hmm. What are you trying to achieve out of this? What's going to make the juice worth the squeeze? Mm-hmm. Right? So, and be very specific. Everybody, of course, wants more clients, we know, but it needs to be something specific that we can track. Mm-hmm. And then from whatever that is, you're going to break down the journey the client's taking to get there. Mm-hmm. And then you can track those specific steps.
Okay.
So I'll try to give a more tangible example here.
All right, let's do it.
what would be something an advisor is trying to achieve? Converting 3 IRAs into Roths. So they need to either have a call with a prospect, or they need to have a client who has an IRA that can be converted. Either way, that information has to get to that person. So however you're putting that information out, let's say it's an email, you're going to only send it to people that it would be relevant to. And then you're going to see how many people opened my email and then how many people clicked on my email. And then that's going to let you know if they opened it, it's really going to have a lot to do with the subject line, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe if they didn't, you could try again with a different subject line. And then how many people clicked on it. Mm-hmm. And that's going to let you know if they are actually interested in the Roth conversion. And so that's what I would say, you know, track those things that are specific to what you're trying to achieve.
Okay, that's valid. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And what would you say for the younger advisor who wants to get started, who might not have the finances or the external resources to pay for services like yours?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say start with 1 or 2 platforms, something that you feel comfortable handling, and don't go all in at once because you are going to run out of time. Even if you have all the time in the day right now, in the future, you're not, because you're going to be bringing on new clients. Mm-hmm. So I would do maybe like a post a week, you know, but really focus on that one post. Or maybe you're going to do a blog a month, but advertise that blog instead of spending your time doing other posts, you know. Mm-hmm. That's where I would focus if I was starting out.
And at what point would someone reach for it to actually make sense for them to hire a professional? Like, when would you say?
Once they can't handle it anymore, If they can't handle it, or even if you can't handle it, you might not have the funds for it. So it's really going to go back to that time versus money and what you're more comfortable spending.
And to that point, like earlier we were talking about like the value of hiring a professional. What are some questions or ways for advisors to not necessarily vet, but to make sure it's a good fit? Because I know, like, that's really important to have a good fit, right?
So important. Marketing is very personal. So you should find a marketing partner that you're comfortable with, someone that you can share ideas with, and also someone that you're comfortable taking direction from, someone that you respect. Because it's just not going to be a good partnership if you don't feel equally yoked.
For sure.
So from that, and then another way to vet is, you know, what is important to you? So like for us, we have a very specific process that we take clients through in a set of services. Like, I'm going to deliver a blog or a video, social media content, an email, and advertising every month for you. But if you're an advisor who really kind of likes to pivot a lot, you're just not going to be a good fit for us. So I think it's important to look at what the service provider is offering and be truthful to yourself if it's going to fit you.
Yeah,
that's valuable. Because if it doesn't fit, it's like not a good fit. Captain Obvious.
Fair enough.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah. So I think we're winding down. I want to be respectful of your time. But one of the things I was curious about is, as a business owner, as somebody who started your own firm, what is your advice to other, either people who are wanting to start their own marketing firm, start their own businesses, or firm owners? Like, just things that you would wish you would have known.
Things I wish I would have known. You're going to get it wrong a lot, and that's okay. It's like, it's how you learn, and you're only going to become better for it going through those experiences.
Yeah. Mistakes are the greatest teachers, though,
for
sure.
Yeah. Sadly.
Yeah.
I know, sadly, but also, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had a lot of teachers.
Yeah, haven't we all?
Oh, and also taking time off. I think that's important. I don't think I did that enough in the beginning. And you can really burn yourself out.
Sure. And so if people want to find you, where's the best place to do that?
Yes. On our website, which is Kalli, K-A-L-L-I, collective.com.
Okay.
I'm also on all the socials. I mean, I have to be.
Awesome. Yes. You actually do in your line of work, right? You can't disappear anymore in this day and age.
Sadly.
Like, you can't just like, you know what? I don't want to be on social media anymore. I just want to. Because even if you yourself are not, like, you have to manage somebody else's.
It's hard.
Oh, I wish.
So, Kalli, this has been so much fun. Are there any parting words for our listeners, our advisors, or us? Any advice?
Yeah. You know what? There is. You have what you need to build amazing content already. It's what you're talking to your clients about in meetings. It's just sitting down, finding time to really put it into digestible content. But you have that available to you already. Like, it's already there. And I think a lot of people feel unconfident, but you've already got everything. I just, like, my services, bring it to the surface, take the heavy lifting off of you. But you already have this. You, like, have the content ideas already.
For sure. Well, somebody brought up the other day at another event I was at, the questions that your clients are asking, the questions that keep coming up, like, there's like right there is the wealth of ideas for your content. So I love that.
Yeah. So that's one of the things we do. We have monthly calls and we're always asking, like, hey, what are you talking about to your clients this month? Or what events do you have coming up? Also making sure to bring in personal stuff into your content is huge, because people want to get to know you. I mean, your ability to relate to your clients is what separates you from a robo advisor.
Yeah.
So we should really, like, embrace it.
And people do feel more comfortable when they know you a little bit better. Like, they, I don't know, it was on another episode, somebody was talking about, like, the concept for Superman. Like, at first was just, he was like this superhero, nothing wrong, no faults, whatever. People didn't, that didn't resonate with people. They want to see you are.
You're really good.
That you're authentic.
I mean, I hate to say flaws, but they want to know you're human.
Exactly. Love it.
I always hear a lot of my favorite podcasters talk about the uncomfortability of meeting people in person, because the people feel like they know them, which in some ways they kind of do, but it's actually a sign, I would assume, that it's proving that their content
it's
is
working.
Actually coming across well, you would say.
Absolutely.
So the takeaway is, you want to be creeped out when people meet you. And think
that's
you're
how you
not
know
feeling
you
creeped out when people meet you in person. You're not doing it wrong.
Exactly.
So, Kalli, we always wrap up with our favorite question, which is, what does finding your freedom mean to you?
The ability to have control over how I'm spending my days.
Yes.
Right?
I love that.
Yeah.
I've often thought that we should compile, like, a little booklet of all the answers, because the common thread is that, like, control over my time, over my day.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, Kalli, this has been fun. Yeah. It's lovely to connect with you in person. Odero, you're amazing as always. And the rest of you, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of the Framework Podcast. Please subscribe so you never miss an episode.